Hello, world. Welcome to the PocketGamer.biz Week in Views podcast with me, Craig Chappell, head of content at PocketGamer.biz, and the editor of PocketGamer.biz, Daniel Griffiths.
Good afternoon.
There's no Brian, Peggy, Aaron, or Paige this week, so worryingly, we've been entrusted with hosting.
Yeah, this could last for like 5 hours because we've got nobody else to rein us in.
But how are you doing, Daniel? How's your week been?
Good, fantastic. I was away the week before, chilling out. So yeah, it's nice to be back in the Southland and catching up. I think I'm just about up to speed. Now that the week's ended, I'm just about up to speed with what happened the week before. So yeah, it's all a bit of a blur as usual. But yeah, ready to talk games and the mobile world.
And well, I've had an interesting week. Some things I can talk about, some things I can't talk about behind the scenes that Daniel will be aware of. But
coming soon.
Yeah. But what else have you been up to this week?
My main thing this week was I had a brilliant chat with a guy called Hendrik Lesser, who is the president of the European Games Developers Foundation, who I've had contact with before. He wrote a brilliant little think piece that went out on the wires a couple of months ago, which I wholeheartedly agreed with. He's an amazing guy, lots to say, very opinionated, and he really, really wants to put the world right. I think everyone's had a tough last 12 months, and he is very keen to sort of help out the guys that are under his wing as part of the foundation and get things back up to speed. So yeah, he's all about making sure that developers are getting their due, that the big guys, the platform holders, don't hold too much power. So we're talking about people like Apple and Google and Unity. He's keeping them all in check. So I've got a great interview with him coming up, and that should be on the site next week. So yeah, that was great stuff. And in other world, yeah, I was away last week, and I spent most of it digging a vast Love Island style fire pit in my back garden, which I shall be getting back to tomorrow.
Is that just in time for the new season? Is it?
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's a beautiful day as well here in the southwest of England. So, so I can't wait. So I can't dig fast enough. I've got to get it finished before summer comes.
Before the contestants arrive.
Well, it's going to be ridiculous because it's going to look immaculate. It's going to look, it's an exact recreation of the Love Island fire pit. Is what I've got in mind. But it's going to be just me sat at it. So it's going to be a bit pathetic, waiting for Maya Jama to come over the horizon and introduce me. But I did my maths with it, and to sit away from a fire pit, you've got to be 1.5 meters away from a fire pit. So if it's circular, that means that it's a circle that is 3 meters in diameter. So imagine digging a 4 foot deep hole, 3 meters in diameter. It's a big job. It's a big job, and it's nearly finished.
You're really scientific about this and getting it right.
I don't want me or any of my guests, if they ever turn up, to be burnt or made uncomfortable in any way. So, yeah, I'll be putting, sending photos. So yeah, if anybody wants to see the photos, do message me. I'll keep you in the loop as to how it's coming along.
We'll follow this up on the Twitter account and Facebook.
Yeah, why not?
So,
what about you? How's things?
So my week has been much less entertaining, I would say. Not too much to report, but next week will be a lot more interesting. So I'm trading the rainy UK for the sunny skies and warm weather of Finland. For a few days. I've heard it's actually a tremendous amount of snow for this time of year, so that'll be interesting. I'm visiting.
Is the sun currently setting in Finland, or does it go all night?
Good point. I don't think there's that much sun to be had. I don't know if this time of year it's even less or more. I guess if we're coming up to summer, it's gradually more.
I don't know. Endless night. Great.
And then I'll be visiting Helsinki and Turku for a few days, just meeting up with local developers there. So looking forward to that. Got a few studio visits. So I think there's an IGDA party. There's a breakfast going on. So gonna be busy. Gonna be busy. But I guess that's enough about my what I'm up to next week, and we'll get to what this podcast is about. So we're gonna go for the news run through to start with. So the first things first, this week we have begun on PocketGamer.biz Mena Month. We're profiling companies from across the Middle East and Africa, as well as highlighting news and trends in the markets. Yesterday, we published an interview with Maysal Awards CEO Noor Kreis, and there'll be plenty of more to come over the next few weeks as we build up to the Dubai Game Expo Summit, which takes place on May 1st and 2nd. At the show, we've got our usual track of sessions, panels, and roundtables. And then we've got a bunch of our normal side events that we always have. So, for example, we've got Investor Connector. That's a chance for investors and developers to meet with each other, show off their games and business plans, and then hopefully from there, discuss any potential funding deals. So if you're interested in developers in the region, or if you're a developer kind of looking for an investor there, then that's a good way to, hopefully raise some funding. And then we've also got the Mena Games Awards. Voting actually closes this Sunday, which is April 7th. Took a quick good look at the calendar. So if you think you should be nominated up for awards, please get your entries in. You can find a story about it on pocketgamer.biz, or you can visit pgconnects.com/Dubai Game Expo Summit and click on the What's On tab for more information about that. But I guess that's enough shilling our events, what we're doing on the site. But Daniel, I think, has the big news of the week to kind of kick us off.
Yeah. Just to get started, as a affirmed Apple head, I couldn't help noticing. Yeah, it wasn't just you. Apple went down this week, which they'd like to say never happens. In reality, it does happen very, very rarely. But any kind of boot to Apple is world class news. Basically, App Store on mobile and Mac being particularly affected. States got it the worst. It was kind of early evening, 6:30 kind of time on Wednesday evening. When this struck, lasted about 2 hours. UK not affected. Everyone tucked up in bed at midnight, around about that sort of time. But just the fact that it happened is a big thing. Apple have a brilliant status page, which is it's essentially a list of all their services, and they use it to show off all the online things that they do. And you know, they're after years of floundering as not being very good at online services, they are world class these days. So they have this status page to show how rock solid everything is, and everything has a big green light on it. So to see this service page suddenly flicker with red lights, there was countless people on social media taking and sharing screenshots, and lots of lovely Android users gloating. When Apple Music was down for like 2 hours on Wednesday night, and lots of comments along the Spotify on my Galaxy is working just fine, kind of thing. But it was an interesting glitch in the otherwise immaculate facade that is the world of Apple. And typically for Apple, it went down and then it came back up again, and they haven't said a thing about it. So
if you don't say it's
all part
of their
master plan. Exactly. I think they meant it to happen. It was all exactly as planned, and perhaps we all imagined it. But it was an interesting little dink in the armor. But for me, it's just things that are directly affecting me. When Sainsbury's goes down and Greggs goes down, and then Apple goes down, I have to start taking it personally, frankly. So I don't know. I think we're in the middle of some sort of cyber war, or I certainly am anyway. But it's interesting. All these things going down. I mean, even WhatsApp, Facebook, and Instagram got hit around about the same sort of time. And it's fascinating. The whole kind of everyone is kind of what an inconvenience. But it's like, mate, is there some sort of conspiracy? Why aren't people talking about this a bit more? Is this the start of the end of the world? I'm quite an upbeat kind of guy, but when these things happen, when Apple goes down the same time as Facebook's empire, sorry, Meta's empire, rather, one has to wonder if whether something else is going on.
It's interesting because like you usually have the same companies kind of behind the scenes actually powering all the servers. It's like if Cloudflare goes down, then loads of things go down all at once. So maybe it was something like that.
Yeah. So for these totally disconnected things, I mean, if Amazon backend was to go out, that would take half the internet with it. I find it hard to believe that a cleaner is tripping over a plug in opposite sides of the world at the same time, frankly. But yeah, that's apparently what's happened, and nobody should worry.
I think like obviously these things happen, but for 2 hours, that's quite a long time for developers, publishers that are trying to make money off the App Store. And so yeah, if they've got a decline in revenue for something that's not their fault and they need that money to, ultimately it's 2 hours, but they need that money to kind of run their business and pay people's salaries, wages. I don't know how it works, but I suspect they probably won't get anything for that downtime. But it is kind of, no. It does, we could joke about it, but ultimately it has a serious business impact on people. But outside Apple, you've got a... Some other news about Brawl Stars. We like talking about Brawl Stars on this show.
Well, this is it. It's almost like Supercell wants us to do it. Supercell had this intense focus on Brawl Stars at the minute, and it's all good news. It's this endless cavalcade of fun. Supercell, you know, they made their promise earlier on, just a month ago, about how they were going to give themselves a kick up the backside. Everyone else thought they were doing great, but Supercell typically turn the microscope on themselves and feel the need to go next level with absolutely everything that they do. So yeah, Brawl Stars, it successfully crushed Clash of Clans monthly revenue in March. So yeah, bigger than Clash. So it's from a game that was nearly canned. I mean, everything at Supercell is nearly canned at some point. For it to then overtake Clash of Clans in March is amazing. So it's like they know what they're doing, frankly. It's a master plan that's working. They got their new, what is it? Is it their new manager? Their first ever lead producer, a guy called Maurice Crowes. He started began on March the 7th. So whether this is all the work of Maurice Crowes, big slap on the back and a pay rise for Maurice. I say that they must be carrying him aloft through the streets, or certainly at least the offices in Supercell. So I can't wait to see what Maurice is going to pull out of the bag for next week, next month, rather.
We spoke about it last week, but there was obviously a good talk at GDC where they went through in quite detail about the process of bringing Brawl Stars back to, I guess, the top, or making it a success again. So obviously it was making money, but for years it had kind of been in decline. And at the end of last year, they finally made the right changes since they got rid of loot boxes. I think it's called Star Drops. And since then, and other changes that they've made, it's just shot up. And then the App Magic data now shows that it's the first time in three and a half years or something like that, that it's gone above Clash of Clans in terms of monthly revenue.
And as if that success wasn't enough, next thing I've got here on the Brawl Stars storyline was ganging up with Baby Shark, the world's most viewed YouTube celebrity. Baby Shark comes to Brawl Stars, as if the good news wasn't good enough already. If in doubt, and I'm sure they had no doubts whatever, call in the shark. There are millions of Baby Shark fans waiting for the next Baby Shark video. Who knows?
They do a PUBG collaboration. I remember the song. If I listen to it again, it'll get stuck in my head. So
further stuff, we had a great feature on the site, which was exploring River Games' Last War and their UA scaling strategy. A digital, a design consultant called Jakob Reimar was in touch, and I spoke with him, and we discussed this feature. Yeah, he takes the game apart, and it's interesting. I love it when a plan comes together, and the science of games works. Basically, you know, I often say, you know, we spent years and years and years working hard to have games accredited as an art form, and now that we've achieved that status, we're now peddling into turning it back into a science again. So yeah, players love it. It makes money. And this is how they did it. So it's a great feature. So that that feature on the Last War scaling strategy is well worth a look.
Did it say if it was profitable?
Yes, I'm confident that it is. Yeah, I know. Yeah, other folks can. There is a little bit of waves of spend equals success these days, but yeah, there are ways to do it without overtly. Blowing $500 million, frankly. Regular readers and listeners will know what we're talking about.
I think it said the strat was, how does a game earn $2 million and 200,000 downloads a day? So, I don't know. That sounds good, yeah. But I guess I don't know how much that costs. But it sounds like it's making money.
Yeah. That, I mean, crumbs. Well, yeah, you've got to be doing something right if that's happening. But yeah, he goes into lots of detail about the features of the game and how they those tie into onboarding the player, and the strategy that he uses were already successfully executed in things like Top War and White Survival. So it's not just the luck of the draw. It's a tried and tested strategy, and he does a great job of explaining it and taking it apart on the site.
Thanks, Daniel. So, going to go on to my section of the news, which is slightly less glamorous. So, latest layoffs news, unfortunately. Ubisoft laid off 45 staff across the globe. So apparently that adds to over 1,000 redundancies that they made last year. This latest round impacts the global publishing team and members in the APAC region. Apparently last year they laid off, amongst the staff that they laid off, were in the VFX and IT divisions, customer service staff, and obviously they closed the Future Games of London team that was behind the Hungry Shark series. I can't remember when they acquired them a few years ago. As I always say, like with these things, it's a real shame. And I think these were like general layoffs, but just to kind of talk about mobile, like I feel like now with mobile, they're just not really bothered at all. They're going to focus down on their core franchises on console and PC. I don't think they really ever had a proper mobile strategy to begin with. They have Calibri Games, which are again, have a fantastic team in the idol genre. Hopefully they'll be okay.
Yeah, it's the classic big big boy strategy. They were late coming to mobile, and now they say, oh well, we didn't want to do it anyway. It's like, yeah, right, whatever. It's too late to stick your neck out and spend some money and get involved. I think so. They kind of got to dip their toes. You know, EA, of course, they do have their huge successes on mobile, but they're a PC and console company.
I think
primarily,
in general, with all of these, is that there's almost like a feeling of like, well, we have to go to mobile, and some of them were very late. Some of the big console publishers were very late to do it. Maybe most of them, and I think Ubisoft, they never had, not to put down the teams that they got because they're great teams, but like none of those were like they were always like a bit like, I don't know. What I'm trying to say, it's like a bit strategy. So, oh, we'll acquire this company, we'll acquire that one. And there was never something to bring it all together. Whereas you get like Activision acquires King, or Take-Two acquires Zynga, EA acquires Glue. In theory, those are potentially transformative deals. Whereas Ubisoft always felt not quite like that. You can argue about whether those other deals I mentioned were good. that's not one.
Yeah.
But it's never that kind of thing. I think they struggle to bring it together. obviously, maybe not really to do with these current layoffs necessarily, but clearly they're going to focus elsewhere.
The big guys find it hard with if they're coming from a culture of, you know, games are 3 years in the making and then we charge 70 quid for them. You know, if they're working with a mobile developer, if they pay the money, get the mobile devs in, the mobile devs say, we want to do this and then we want to give it away for free, then they have a mental block over it because it's just not the company mindset. So I can only imagine, maybe it doesn't happen so much these days, but I can only imagine the people coming under the wings of these larger games companies, these giants of the past, and banging their head against the wall because they're not allowed to do what they want to do. Mm. It's a clash of cultures basically. And I love Ubisoft. They are legends as far as I'm concerned. So to see them sort of stumble is a bit upsetting. But hopefully they can get it together and make some great new franchises on all platforms.
Yeah. So elsewhere in more positive news, A16Z, they've opened their third speedrun accelerator with a $75 million up for grabs. So
wow.
They aim to invest that into pre-seed startups, and I think it said there's an individual investment cap, I guess, of 750K. I think that means at least from A16Z, so maybe they get more elsewhere. Participants will also get access to industry coaches and mentors. One of the interesting things about this is, other than the fact that it's a big $75 million fund, is that it feels like we're seeing a lot of VCs raise capital now and are actually looking to deploy it, which is a positive given the challenges of the last year. So earlier in the week, we reported that a new VC, Leighton Ventures, has been set up for investments and investments in Turkey and global games companies. And then they also, on top of that, provide advisory services in areas such as UA, game design, development and analytics. So I'm feeling a bit more positive this year about investment in the industry. It still seems like we're going to go through layoffs, so it's still going to be a challenging year. But there does seem to be funding for startups, and there's been some big deals for companies that are kind of had their first game out and looking to scale. So like Second Dinner had 100 million. which is mad.
If I'm not wrong, last A16Z speedrun, the second one was 75 million as well.
Right.
So my attitude is it hasn't gone up, but it hasn't come down. If they'd gone, we've got 50 million, it would have been oh hello, but it's 75, and the amount for individual investment going into single companies is up to $750,000. Now, so that's actually increased. So yeah, I too took it as it's a good sign. I mean, intrigued as to how these things work, but you know, by all accounts, you know, they are speculating to accumulate. They can put $75 million out there and see an investment make an investment and see a profit. So it's nice to see that after the gloom that was January, February, you know, if you're plotting graphs of January, February profits and the amount of redundancies and layoffs that were happening, yeah, it would have been pretty gloomy by now. But it feels like things have slowed down in a good way. It feels like people have got the measure of what 2024 holds, and hopefully the investment can come back.
I think, like, yeah, you talk about the doom and gloom, and you know, we talk about like the negative stuff, but clearly the mobile games industry still generates a lot of revenue for a lot of companies, and investors are still willing to put some money into the future of it, because obviously we won't see the fruits of these investments for quite some time. So I think, yeah, this is a positive. We could be a bit bullish on the future of the industry. So in other news, we've got Thunderfall is selling Head Up Games for 500,000 euros. We previously reported that Thunderfall was looking to sell Head Up, And it now looks like they found a buyer in Microcuts Holding, which is a venture set up and controlled by HeadUp's initial founder, Dieter Schürrle. Sorry if I pronounced that incorrectly. I think the deal is actually funded. My understanding was, from what I read, the deal was actually funded by a payout that Thunderful owed HeadUp for the initial acquisition. That's according to the story. And then, as some context, Thunderful initially acquired HeadUp Games for 11 million euros. So this sale is like 5% of that, less than 5% of that. That's not great. Good luck to teams on both sides and to the staff at HeadUp. So hopefully there's no layoffs there. And also, just for anyone that doesn't know, HeadUp Games make the Bridge Constructor games. But yeah, it's just a strange deal. That's quite the cut.
I'd love it when somebody very, very close to the game, close to the outfit, steps up and says, "Look, I'll buy it off you. Let me take it. I'm the boss of it." So to have their founder Dieter Schürrle step up and say, basically say, "You're not doing this right, and I can do it better," and then to land it at what on the surface looks like a bargain price, good on him. I'll putting your money where your mouth is a good way to be, and I admire that. So best of luck. Hopefully it works out well for both Thunderful and HeadUp.
So you've got some more news.
I got some bits. One that caught my eye this week. Epic removes Aquarius Game Studios Wonderbox from Apple Arcade. Games come and go from Apple Arcade all the time, so it's not of any interest or any concern at all. Aquarius create Wonderbox, popular create your own adventure device game on that became part of Apple Arcade, and Apple Arcade have had it for front and center. But yeah, inevitably the microscope has to be descended on the fact that Epic are pulling games from an Apple service. So we wrote a story, said it like it is. This has happened. There were comments on Reddit from Wonderbox fans and along the lines of, just because Epic have fallen out with Apple, I can't believe that I can't play Wonderbox anymore. Oh, by the way, the game is we haven't had this confirmed or denied as yet, but the game is disappearing entirely, is being 100% unsupported. You will not be able to download it if you haven't downloaded it already, and you will also not be able to play it and play your creations if you have downloaded it. So it's quite the withdrawal. So we wrote a story and we commented that folks on Reddit, fans on Reddit, have said this. But Epic were in touch, and this is all strictly off the record, so I can't say anything. But I think I can safely say that Epic were in touch with us, and we're very keen to point out that this is absolutely nothing to do with their ongoing disagreement with Apple. So I just wanted to make it very clear that Wonderbox being removed from Apple Arcade, Epic say definitely nothing to do with them not getting along with Apple. So it's just a coincidence. I have no idea how these things work. I mean, I guess everything goes on Apple Arcade under a timed license, or you can have it for this much for this long. So maybe it was perfectly innocent, and Wonderbox's time was up. But normally, games being removed or moving on from Apple Arcade, not particularly a hot topic. But when Epic own it, we have to sit up and pay attention, really.
I think it goes back to one of the parts of this goes back to game preservation, and you're gonna lose these games forever, and there's nowhere else you can get them, and they can't play them at all. And it's quite sad that for example, make myself sound old, used to buy games physically. I love buying games digitally, by the way, so I'm not gonna go into that route, but used to buy games physically and own them forever. Like, I could play one of those old, I could play one of the original Half-Life spin-offs now. Like, I have a CD drive, I could put it in and still play it. Whereas some of these games, you'll just never ever see them again. Like you think one day, oh, I'd love to play that, or oh, I'd love to share this with someone. Like this experience was, well, I loved it, or it was important to me, or something, and you won't be able to do that. So that's quite sad.
Speaking from personally, I bought and paid for with genuine money the original Tomb Raider on. And I used to play that on my iPhone and my iPad. And one day it stopped working. And I'm just looking on my phone now. I've deleted it because it's not supported. And I'm sure that I'm sure that if I was to go on the App Store, I wouldn't be able to. Yeah, in fact, I did months ago. I just went, I wonder where the Tomb Raider's back, given that I paid like £9.99 for it years and years ago. But yeah, no, it's gone. And if I wasn't so busy with everything else in my life, I would go and travel to Derby and see Core Design and knock on their door. I don't think there's anything left in.
So someone will not answer. Like, what do you? Who's Core Design? What are you talking about?
They used to be here. I've been in this office. I know this is where you make Tomb Raider. I was here 25 years ago. Let me in. But yeah. If you're listening to this, you owe me a copy of Tomb Raider. That's all I'm saying.
I mean, there's a separate issue there, right? Which is because the operating systems, like on mobile, they get updated and then are not supported anymore, that developers can't, it's not worth the money for them to update the game and make it compatible. And so, again, you lose these games because of that issue as well. So
I'd love to see the bit in the small print that says, I guess it's in there, buried, isn't it? We reserve the right to take this from you.
Well, I mean, I'm pretty sure in the terms, it's you don't own it, right? You basically loan these things from the platform, and at any time they can remove that.
Yeah. A friend of mine buys everything digitally. Buys everything physically, and just was aghast that you know, I was, you know, I've paid money for movies on Apple. I'm the guy that does that. But he was saying, you do realize they can switch this off. And I was like, no, surely not. Surely they wouldn't do that. But yeah, they can. Yeah. So, stock up on disk drives and discs. Because come the cyber war.
From the two heads of PocketGamer.biz, the forward-looking digital mobile site, please buy your physical copies of games. Yeah.
Or at least
we're going to start a retro podcast next week.
Oh my gosh! Could some aspiring new company provide a service where things can safely live on forever?
Yeah, well, I mean, so that has happened. So Game Club tried to do that. They tried to bring back old games. What's his name? Eli used to be at Touch Arcade, and then joined them to help out with that. I can't remember the name of the CEO. I apologize. But yeah, they basically, what their big thing was, bring back old games, and part of that was game preservation. And I know Eli wrote a big article about. Well, yeah, these games will be lost forever.
It's sad. There's a lot of joy to be had in these games, and people should be allowed to play them, and especially if they've bloody paid for them, frankly.
So speaking of technology, you've got another story.
Yeah, another quick one. This one caught my facial age estimation tech is not ready for the parental consent prime time, so the FTC. So all kinds of folks want this to happen. In short, it is at the minute, there are quite rightly checks in place to prevent minors from playing interactive entertainment that they shouldn't. And the creators of interactive entertainment naturally think that this is a massive pain. And while they want to adhere to the law, they want to make it as slick as possible. So age estimation technology from face scans was mooted. The FTC basically said it's not ready. It's not ready yet. It's not good enough. It's not secure enough. They don't trust it. And they worry about the fact that facial scans of children and storing all that on servers. It's just an absolute privacy nightmare. I don't know what the answer is. You know, at the minute, there are all kinds of hoops that you need to go through as regards providing credit card details and confirmation with you know the with adults that the right people are seeing the right sort of content. But yeah, it doesn't look like technology is going to swoop in and save the day anytime soon. Interesting that one of the parties that was really very much lobbying for this to happen was the creator of the technology itself, and understandably. But yeah, so they're drowning their sorrows right now and having a very gloomy weekend. But yeah, it's just not good enough, and the FTC reckon it's not up to snuff. It's hard to imagine when it ever will be, and even then, the ways in which it can be circumvented. But yeah, it needs to be in place, and you know, there'll be a vast payday when this sort of thing is sped up and made easier. But that day is not today, unfortunately.
So there is. I don't think it's not this, but I spoke with a company newly formed called KID, and they're creating it's like a special login. So instead of using Facebook or Google to log into an app, you use KID, and that means that parents can track what games you're playing or what apps you're using, and they can also through that allow which ones that you want to use, and even deeper, where possible, what features can actually be, I think, enabled, or at least tell you, okay, well, this game has loot boxes or something, and this and that, and then they can easily like look on their phone, they'll get a notification, go like, oh, my child is looking at this app, or wants to download this app, yes or absolutely not. So I guess that people are looking at ways to do it. That's not facial recognition, but obviously there's an issue there, and some companies are trying to tackle it.
KID, did you say? So that's KID.
Yeah. Yeah, very
brilliant.
Clever.
The penny just dropped. Yeah. For those of you that saw that one faster than I did, well done.
And it's actually the people that made it are like a real experts in one, the legal side of things around the world.
Right.
Like different regulations around this kind of topic, and senior kind of games leaders behind it. So there is actually there's serious people behind it. While obviously it's not facial recognition, it's just another way of kind of, well, how do you safely, how do you make, I guess, the internet and specifically like apps and games safe for children to use, so that parents know what's happening and can, if need be, control that a bit.
Yeah, it's a tricky one. It needs to be there, but what the best and fastest and easiest way of making it real and safe it's not been solved yet.
So we got one more bit of news.
Yeah, really, really neat feature, which I like. It touches on mobile, but it hits the broader world of games. A global analyst and advisory service, Omdia, brought together a panel of five team members to discuss the 10 questions in gaming right now in an online webinar, which I thought was great. Yeah, it was 10 questions. They range from why are we seeing layoffs right now, which they discussed eloquently, all the way to where AI's place in game development and alternative app stores, whether they are the future. Lots of things being discussed in there. The spiraling size of budgets for AAA games came under analysis. Yeah, it's have a little search for 10 games industry questions answered on pocketgamer.biz. We've got a little recap of their thing, and there is a link through, so if you want to sit in them. I think the video is 2 hours long, but yeah, there's a lot of thing there. Only 21% of folks surveyed, this was one of the things that they discussed, think that AI will have an outright positive result. So yeah, slightly less
generative AI.
Optimistic. Generative AI, yeah. But the numbers we've been seeing have been a lot more positive, but their survey says that they are, yeah, they're not seeing a 21%. Only 21 think that it will have an outright positive result. Yeah, draw your own conclusions. But yeah, it's a great little piece, and addresses 10 things across games which are uniformly interesting. Even if you're into mobile, the big picture stuff they talk about is really good.
Thanks, Daniel. So yeah, we're going to move on to the Week in Views section. So this week, I published our interview with Sensor Tower Chief Operating Officer Tom Shui about their acquisition of Data.ai. There's a few things to unpack here. So we all know now that there were layoffs. That was, again, confirmed by Sensor Tower. MobileGamer.biz previously reported that as many as half the staff at Data.ai were let go as part of the deal. I've heard this. I've heard similar, and I was told maybe as high as 60%, but that is really just still a rumor and unconfirmed. The value of the deal hasn't been confirmed. I know that some staff received a letter that the sale price was less than the value of the exercise price of their common stock.
Explain that to me in layman's terms, because my eyebrows shot up a bit. What does that mean? What I think it means.
I think that means that, and I have asked people, that the company was sold for less than its previous valuation. So we don't have any insights into how much the deal was, but it would seem to be that it's less than it was, what they thought their actual value was.
So for employees, just when you thought you had, just when you thought you were rich, turns out you're not.
That's common stock as well. So I think there's preferred stock. So the founders would have made money. I don't know how many staff this affects. So, because I'm not sure I can't quite confirm the rest of it. There's about as much as I can say. But yeah, like, at least some people were affected and didn't get anything. So that accounts so that means if you didn't buy any of your shares, you now won't get any. If you did buy them and the sale price was less than what you bought them for, then you basically lose that money and you don't get anything.
Yeah. It's a bad weekend for these folks. You're out of work and your shares are worth less than you paid for them. Thanks for coming.
So my theory about the deal, this is total guess, both companies were struggling to grow substantially in the current challenging market. And so a merger made sense to the founders and to the private equity financiers. And it gave Data.ai executives their exit. Back specifically to the interview, Data.ai as a platform will remain as is for now, but Sensor Tower does want to consolidate faster than they did. Excuse me. They want to consolidate faster than they did with their previous acquisition of Pathmatics. So we can expect a combined platform at some point. Shui said that part of the thesis of the deal was also looking at other platforms as well. So as the industry goes cross-platform, they are looking at whether they could potentially provide data for PC, console, Steam, etc. PC, console, Steam, console, but and PC kind of notoriously actually quite hard to find data for compared to mobile, where it's easier to find estimates. So Tom was coy on this question, but I think they're ultimately looking to IPO in 12 to 18 months. Total guess from me.
The whole thing's a big, you know, it's this industry's for just cashing out. Everyone's got the exit strategy. It's just a matter of when that kicks in. You know, for Data.ai, that was sooner than everyone thought, frankly.
Well, I think Data.ai has been looking for that for quite some time, to be honest. And the time just never really arrived to go public, especially in the last couple of years when a lot of companies have not been going public. Ultimately, they need to show growth. And with this deal, Sensor Tower has taken out their core competition, and their investors want to see returns on both their data AI and Sensor Tower investments. So with this deal, maybe that becomes a step closer. I have some other thoughts on this in general, and I'm going to be exploring them a lot better than I'm going to do on this podcast in an article. But I think it is tougher than ever for mobile market intelligence to get visibility into the mobile games market. It's actually difficult to get full chart ranking data, which for some companies is kind of a key part of how they generate their estimates. Apple and I think maybe Google, they limited the number of games that you can actually see, whereas it used to be, the figure used to be higher, so you could generate more estimates, basically. So now you get a smaller snapshot of the market, at least through that part. At least through that strategy of kind of collating your data. Meanwhile, you've got games, at least the big ones, going cross-platform. You've got web shops, so rise of payments off the store, and now with in the EU with the DMA, Digital Markets Act, there'll be more third-party app stores. So it's difficult to get a clear look at the market size. So if you're looking at Playtika, what if 20-30% of their revenue is now coming from web stores? It might look like that revenue has gone down on a market intelligence platform, but maybe it's actually gone up. I know that in the interview, like Sensor Tower is very aware, they're open about that. They're very aware of some of these challenges, and part of the thesis of this deal is to help kind of overcome those challenges. And they're going to be looking at ways to kind of provide good data. As I said earlier, PC and console are pretty notorious for getting good data. And then with web shops, you're going to need, I imagine you'd have to get publishers to open up and share that information with you directly. So that must be quite a challenge to actually get that data directly, especially if you have to get it from so many different sources. And then what do you do with that data? Because you can't surface specific revenue like that in the platform. App Annie itself got in trouble with the SEC a while back for doing this. App Annie used to be the old name for data AI. So I think the future of market intelligence looks more difficult, I think, than it had been, but it's still a very useful tool. And you know, these companies ultimately do employ very smart people to figure these things out and use different methods to generate good estimates. But I think there's a lot there, right? So I think all of that plus heavy competition with each other, I think, and the down market kind of come together to help drive this acquisition the way it happened.
Do you think there was an increasing perception of these numbers becoming increasingly inaccurate? Because I remember having it explained to me as to how much of these numbers are projection based on sort of past activity, and just thinking, what, this isn't the exact sort of ones and noughts science that I assumed it was.
I think it's, I don't know, it depends on the data company, because they all do it slightly differently, but it's like, if it's chart ranking data, then that's actually pretty up to date for estimates ultimately.
Does Biome Data AI make Sensor Tower's data more accurate and more trustworthy?
That's a good question. I mean, I guess it doesn't hurt, like, but they're both, I don't know. So full disclosure, I did work at both, but I don't know like the full inner workings of them. And there's probably things that I wouldn't be able to say as well, right? If I did know them. I would say that surely though, you bring the top two together, it wouldn't hurt your data, right? It would make it better, I would imagine, even if they're quite similar.
The only thing that then comes into question is if you're merging two things together to create one doubly powerful whole, the idea that they've sacked half the staff is a what moment for me.
Yeah.
The speed of this thing, the speed. I mean, I think I remember writing, you know, when this first broke, I wrote the story saying, doubtless the synergizations will kick in shortly. But I didn't think, you know, I was off last week digging a hole in the ground, and when I came back, hundreds of people have been off within what felt like a week. It does seem insane. They've obviously had their fingers burnt with the Pathmatics thing.
Well, I think the opposite. I think Pathmatics has actually worked out well for them. It was just by what he was saying that I think Tom was just saying, I think they wish they'd consolidated it sooner. So Pathmatics existed as its own thing and ran independently for a while.
They were slow and steady with Pathmatics.
Yeah, rather than they bought it properly within the platform, was my understanding of that interview. And so with Data AI, they're still going to take the time. So he said they're still going to speak with customers, I think, for the rest of the year. So, you know, it won't be that soon. But ultimately, the nature of this kind of thing, they're going to merge the two platforms together and try and come up, I guess, with the best version of both.
But yeah, 10-ton gorilla sat looking over the wall point of view. Yeah, it feels like Pathmatics, they gave them the benefit of the doubt, and it didn't quite go how they wanted. So this time they're going in heavy. So yeah, 1 week later they've sacked half the company. Thank you, I love that. I don't know.
Well, I think Data AI was bigger than Sensor Tower, right?
Yeah.
So that's another factor. Yeah. Ruthless.
It is. It is. It's all about the Benjamins at the end of the day. But yeah, we'll see what their strategy is. We'll see who buys what next. But yeah, they're playing a game and they're playing it hard for sure.
So away from Sensor Tower, you have other news for your week in views.
We're going to finish on an upbeat thing. Let's do that. Monument Valley was 10 years old a couple of days ago, which is great. Fair brings a tear to my eye just even mentioning its name. I absolutely love Monument Valley. I've met Jennifer Starris from the team not so long ago, which is a personal highlight for me. I've loved Monument Valley, my entire family. Love Monument Valley, so it's incredible. It's 10 years old. You know, I for me, it really kind of kickstarted iOS gaming and generally sort of mobile gaming as regards what was possible. You know, whether folks can cast their mind back that far, but you know, there were doubts as to the validity of the touchscreen as a gaming interface. Way back then, you know, you're much better off with a joypad or a mouse and keyboard, aren't you? But yeah, that coined it for me. It was absolutely perfect. Great game design, great looks, and great music, of course. But yeah, the design and the way that it worked with its touch interface really set the benchmark. So it's 10 years. They're kickstarting a year of celebrations, which if you have a look on the site, Monument Valley is 10 years old today. Story. They list the things that they're doing over the year ahead. So many innovations. If you haven't played it yet, then do so. Has had its is I think is still currently on Apple Arcade, and it's about to go onto Netflix games, which is great. So if you've got Netflix, and who hasn't, you can play it for free, which is ideal. But yeah, coined so much great stuff. You had to first of all, you had to buy it. Because it was worth the money. I think it was just a few quid, to be honest. And they had a brilliant thing where there was one of the chapters built into the game was one of the early in-app purchases. And I maintain that absolutely everybody that bought the game then bought the in-app purchase for the extra bit at the end. I know I did. It was fantastic. So yeah, if you haven't got or seen or heard of Monument Valley, I'm sure I'm talking to all of three people globally at this point. If you've got Netflix, do watch out for it arriving on Netflix. We'll be sure to announce that on the site and have a go at it. But yeah, nice work, us two. Massive fan. Well done. Congratulations on Monument Valley being 10.
So bigging up the for me anyway, that a local London studio, you know, hugely successful. I can't imagine anyone doesn't like really Monument Valley. It's such a great game. Both of them actually really great games. And I remember, I think Dan Gray was saying one of the ideas when they were making it was like, you'll love this one, Daniel. Is that what? If Apple made a game for the iPhone, what would they make? And that was kind of the inspiration, I think, or part of the creative process for coming up with this game in particular. And it is like if Nintendo kind of made a game for mobile. Almost Nintendo famous for creating a device that can play the games that they want to make. And this was like suits perfectly the device that you play on, which is obviously mobile.
Yeah, no, it's great. It's like Tetris on Game Boy. That when that comes together, yeah, it all makes sense. So yeah, huge inspiration and an amazing moment. That and wow, 10 years have absolutely flashed by, haven't they? Blimey.
Yeah, I got 10 years. What? Oh no!
Yeah, don't get me started. So yes, that's it for me on that beautiful nostalgic bombshell. We shall be signing off.
Thanks, Daniel. So that brings us to the end of this week's show. Please like and subscribe, leave a review, and reach out to us if you have any feedback. Let us know what you think. For now, though, until next week, and hopefully more people will be here next week. Enjoy your weekend, and we'll be back. Goodbye.